Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Up All Night, a horror anthology podcast. My name is Cortland, and with me today is the guy that's always taking decisive action. It's Brandon. How you doing, Brandon?
I'm doing good. Decisively.
Excellent, Brandon. That's how I expect you to be, is decisive, always taking action. Okay, anyway, how are you doing, Brandon? How's your day? How's your week?
Oh, so good. So good.
Did you do anything incredible?
There's like a little bit of a cold snap here. Like, it was super hot, and I was like, oh, man, summer's coming. And then it was cold this week, and I'm just trying to enjoy it while I can.
You know, I know what's funny, Brandon, is that we've been, like, having nice warm weather. It was, like, 70 degrees out yesterday, and I'm like, this is October. What's going on here? But I love it. Except for it made all the leaves fall. But besides that part.
That's fun.
Yeah, I know, right? So, like, okay, it's cold snap over there. So what is it, like, 98 degrees? Remember that band?
Yeah, I do. I think about 98 degrees, kind of a lot for a band that I can't think of a single song that they had.
I was just going to ask if you can even think of one song that they had, because I can't.
But there's, like, once a week that I think of 98 degrees for some reason.
That's weird, Brandon. I think we should get you checked into a mental hospital.
It is very weird.
Well, Brandon, it's been a whole week. Tell me everything. What have you been doing? What have you been playing? What have you been up to?
I've been playing a lot of games.
Get out. Oh, my gosh.
I've been trying to play all the games because I don't know
when you're going to
die. Knows this, but 2023 has been just about the best year in video games that I can think of.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say something more sinister. Like, I don't know if anybody knows this, but I have diabetes or something.
Nope. Brandon facts come later.
I was going to say, Brandon, you're just hiding stuff from me.
I've been dead this entire time.
So, Brandon, yeah, 2023 has been a really interesting year for video games. We got Resident Evil 4. We got Baldur's Gate 3. We got... what's that Starbound thing or whatever? Nobody likes it.
Starfield.
Yeah. We got Mario Wonder. We have Super Mario RPG a little bit later, too. I might have to get that, even though I played it a billion times as a child. Yeah, it's been a lot. Did you watch any... Oh, go ahead. Oh, my God.
Go ahead. What were you going to say? Oh, my God.
I was going to ask if you watched any other spooky movies.
I did. I watched the first two Child's Play movies today.
And what did you think?
They're both still good.
Yeah, I like one and two. They're good. And then three happens and you're like, ugh, okay. And then you got Bride and Seed and you're like, all right.
Yeah,
and then
I think this is pretty much where I get off the Child's Play train. But I hear the later ones are actually good.
I did watch Curse of Chucky a couple of years ago. Really good movie. Liked it a lot. Cult of Chucky is also, I guess, good. I'd never watched that one. And then the TV series. I've already raved about it a couple of times to you. So yeah, it's good stuff. Don Mancini's over there making magic.
Yeah. He knows what he's about.
He does.
Killer dolls.
I appreciate that. Super funny. Super good stuff. I told people I was going to watch a horror movie this week, and then I didn't.
Okay. So you're a liar.
Yeah. Whoops. I was like, I'm going to watch this and that and that, and then I didn't do any of that. So my bad. Sorry. We still have a couple of days till Halloween, though, you know? Did your kids get costumes? Like, is trick-or-treating a thing over in Australia yet? I know it's been a couple of years.
Yeah, we talk about this every year. Like, I'm always like, oh, I'm surprised. It's more of a thing this year. So I'm expecting it to be more of a thing this year.
Nice.
I'll let you know after it happens. But
okay.
Yeah, they're going to do the trick-or-treating thing.
Beautiful. Do you have costumes?
Yeah. They're just going to be the, you know, witches and pumpkins and ghosts. They're not like too interested in like being like, oh, I want to dress up as this specific character.
I always think it's fun. My favorite part about Halloween is passing out candy and seeing kids in their costumes. And I love the kids that are in such specific costumes that like I have no idea what they are. I think it's so funny. And in a good way, not in like a what the hell are you kind of thing. Like, I love it when kids are creative.
And yeah. You're just awesome. Like, oh, you're a cool looking skeleton. You're yeah. Allie McBeal.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, I'm the skeleton from frame 927 of Secret of Nim. What are you talking about? Like, yeah, I love that shit. It's so good. Brandon, I haven't done anything this week, as I said, so I think we should probably just jump into this episode of Tales from the Crypt, because it's the longest episode. There. It's the longest episode of Tales from the Crypt we've had so far. I don't know if it was an hour long when it premiered on HBO or what, but yeah, it's a long one. It's yellow. It's the season finale, okay, of season 3 of Tales from the Crypt, right?
Yeah. It's like a double episode, but it doesn't really feel that way when you're watching it because...
No, it really doesn't. Not, I thought the same.
Not a ton of stuff happens.
It's only like 10 minutes longer, and most of that is... honestly, there's a lot of shots of like nothing going on, which is totally fine. Like, it really fits the episode, and it's quite dramatic, Brandon. This is a family drama of an episode about World War One.
It really is. It's you very know, dramatic. Normal Tales from the Crypt Fair.
Yeah, yep. Just getting into like daddy issues and stuff. I'm like, what am I watching? What is this? But Brandon, how did you feel about Yellow?
Well, I was really excited for this one because I don't know. I'm very interested in World War One.
Yeah.
As a historical event. Mostly because we did not learn about it at all, like, in school.
No,
we didn't. World War One was like a one-sentence footnote in my history book that was like, well, this one war happened, but then it got to World War Two, and it was like, pew, pow.
Yep. And then they made the Pearl Harbor movie.
The sequel was bigger and better than ever.
Yeah, I was going to say, we spent a lot of time on World War II when in my history class breezed over World War I, and Vietnam was like unmentionable. So, and then they were like, and I guess there was a Korean War. I don't really know. But World War II, though, you guys.
Yeah, that one was a big hit with the audiences.
I think we did end up watching It's All Quiet on the Western Front, which I'm pretty sure is World War I. But besides that, I don't know much about World War I. And I didn't learn much about World War One from this episode either.
Anything from this one?
No, this could have been any old war, you know. Could have been any of them. I did like it though, Brandon. Did you like Yellow?
Yeah. It was a nice. Well, not nice, but it was a good little story.
Yeah.
And I mean, I kind of saw where it was going about halfway through, but it was still well acted. Well shot. It was just a nicely produced episode.
It was. There's a lot of scenes of, honestly, just dudes doing flips and shit in this episode. So that's pretty
it's
rare.
It's like an episode of Power Rangers.
It kind of is, yeah. There's explosions and people flipping off and, you know, falling into water and stuff. It was pretty cool. A lot of going on. But I think we should just get into this episode here, Brandon.
All right.
Like I said, my notes are technically longer, so we should just get into it. Well, our episode starts up and we see a signpost with some arrows pointing to Verdun, which is 100 miles away. Tipperary, I don't know, 50 miles. Here is 10 miles. And then Eternity is another 10 miles another way. Not really sure what that means, Brandon. Is that anything important?
Not for this story, no.
All right. Well, we hear the voice of our best friend call out, "Firing squad, present arms." And the camera kind of swivels over to show us the Crypti. He's in 1918 army gear with a gun in his arms. He greets us as creeps and says that he was just about to fire off tonight's dead time story. It's about a young soldier that doesn't want to be in the army anymore. I don't blame him. I can't imagine why not. I mean, war's a great equal opportunity destroyer. He gives a modest little chuckle at that one and then asks, "Now where was I? Oh yeah, ready? Maim?" And here's my favorite part. And he shoots the gun into a bookshelf, and his tail of the books gets shot to the ground and opens up to the particular page for our tale. Crypti calls tonight's tale Yellow.
I love that he shoots the book down.
Yeah,
it was just like too lazy to go get it.
Yeah, he's like, he put up this elaborate ruse to get this book down there. And thankfully, everything paid off so we can see what this story's all about, right?
Yeah. Good thing there wasn't a giant hole in the middle of the page. We couldn't see the cover.
Yeah, for real.
Is this the first time we see the Crypti packing?
Yeah, I think it might be, actually. I'm trying to remember. There might have been like a revolver or something for Lover Come Hack to Me or something like that.
Yeah, I remember him dressed up as a police officer once. But I don't think he shot anything.
He did get off of a motorcycle one time, too. The picture for this one, though, Brandon, is kind of basic. In the foreground is a dude in army fatigues who looks scared as fuck. Behind him is the face of Dan Aykroyd, who looks pissed as hell at him. It's kind of funny. Behind all that is a general or whatever standing there as a war is going on behind them in the night.
Yeah. Not a great cover. And I was like, uh-oh, is this episode actually going to suck?
Yeah, the cover's not great, but it does really... I mean, Dan Aykroyd. I don't think he ever gets actually pissed, but like, I'll take it. Angry Dan Aykroyd, whatever. We fade into our episode for a little while here because we just stare at a yellow flower that's blowing in the wind a little bit. It's a long time, too. It's like 20 seconds, maybe, of just this yellow flower with some, like, you know, song of motif playing behind it. There's just dirt all around it, too. There's nothing interesting to look at.
It's a bit on the nose. This episode's called Yellow.
Yeah.
Stare at this yellow flower. Get it?
I don't understand. But we get like this intro credits, and then the camera pulls back a little, and a man's dead body is flung on top of the flower, as I would have expected it to happen, you know?
Get it?
I knew that yellow flower is going to get smashed, okay?
Yeah, I thought it was going to be a boot coming down and crushing it.
Nope, it's a whole ass dead body.
Nothing beautiful can exist.
There's gunshots and explosions happening all over the place because this is war, Brandon. Some guy with a whistle blows it and ushers a wave of men into battle as another guy is shot dead. We see the army slowly advance when an explosion goes off and this dude just flips through the air and lands in a puddle of water. And
we see the budget for season three of Tales from the Crypt.
Yep, almost
entirely.
Yeah, you're right. As I expected, this is a very bombastic opening for World War One, as it should be. And, you know, like we said in the last episode, HBO did Band of Brothers, so I don't know if some of the crew from that moved on to do Band of Brothers at some point, but like I think this is really well done. It looks devastating, as war does, you know, and they do a great job. That's the one thing about this episode. They do a great job of representing war. You got the trenches and everything, the barricades, the barbed wire. It looks great. I mean, I wouldn't want to be there, but it looks great.
It looks so fun.
You're right, yeah. A little title pops up showing us that it's the year 1918 and that this is World War One. It's the 49th day of continuous battle, as the show tells us. We see more dudes getting shot, and then we cut over to the trenches where some guys are climbing up and headed into battle. Another explosion goes off and launches a dude across the screen. Whistle guy blows his whistle, and we see another guy get catapulted into a puddle of water that splashes the camera.
That might be the worst part about charging in World War One is all the friggin' whistles. It's just constant. Mm-hmm. So annoying.
Look, nobody likes whistles. Nobody does.
I would be running to the German side just to get away from all the whistles.
Well, what if they have whistles too, Brandon? We never get to see it from their side.
There's nowhere to go. Just hang out in no man's land.
We hear Lance Hendrickson's voice yell, "Hold your guard!" Because he's got like a really gruff voice here. As he really goes prone.
So great.
Near a puddle of water. Lance, who plays Sergeant Ripper, scooches over to a dude laying on the ground face down and rolls him over to see that he's dead. Ripper yells, "Damn!" An army crawls over to a guy with a gun at a barricade asking, "Where's the lieutenant?" But that guy is also dead, so he yells, "Damn!" This whole episode, just him crawling from one person to the next and seeing they're dead and being like, "Damn it!"
I could have watched like 40 minutes of that.
Nope, we got 40 minutes of the yellow flower instead. Sorry, Brandon.
Oh.
He finally army crawls over to a guy that's totally alive right now, and he asks, "Hey, have you seen the lieutenant?" The guy slowly points over and says, "I think he's over there." And then gunfire shoots his arm off, and Ripper's all, "God damn!" He does finally make a run for the trenches now, though. He gets down there, and he rips open a little curtain hidey hole to reveal the lieutenant there, who's lying down, having a nice little drink from his flask. He offers up his drink, asking if Ripper wants one, and Ripper's all, "What the hell are you doing here? Our orders are to take the hill. The charges have stalled, Brandon." Uh-oh.
That's not good.
Everybody wants the hill, Brandon. We need it. It's a hill.
Yeah. They'll throw hundreds of thousands of people to take that one tiny little hill.
Yeah. It's very important. This guy here, the lieutenant, he's the main character of our story. It's Lieutenant Martin Calthrob. I'm probably saying that name wrong. It's fine. He gets a little sassy here telling Ripper to speak up because all he can hear are the sound of gunfire and explosions, which is very true because this episode is very loud because there's gunfire and explosions going off all over the place.
Yeah, it's war.
He adds in that the German are shooting the crap out of them in case Ripper had noticed. Remember that one video, the "You Done Goofed," where she's like, "I'm just sitting here crying in case you haven't noticed."
I forgot about that part.
It's like my favorite part.
I have to go watch it again.
Ripper yells that they should climb the hill, or do you want them to stop? Martin tells him, "No, I don't want them to stop. The Huns have zeroed in on us and are cutting us to ribbons." Were there Huns in World War One, Brandon?
It's what they call the Germans.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. So I was like, now there's Huns? What is this, Mulan?
Yes. It truly was a world war.
Yeah, everybody's there.
There's Vikings coming in from the south.
It's a party, Brandon. Everybody's there. He wants Ripper to order the men to retreat. So Ripper throws down his gun, yelling that he can't do that, that the general ordered them to take the hill. Martin tells him, no, I'm ordering us to retreat. Now do it. They argue some more, and Martin damns the general, saying,
damn the orders and damn the general!
We're the ones getting shot and killed over here. He hands Ripper a flare gun, and Ripper angrily shoots it into the sky, and we hear soldiers call out that that means retreat. We watch as some wounded dude is carried down the trenches on a stretcher, and then Dan Aykroyd appears and slowly walks his way through the trenches himself. There's a bunch of explosions going off around him, and he makes his way to an entrance to an underground base or something. He calls out, man, looks like von Hersenberg is putting all of his resources in this left flank. I don't know who von Hersenberg is either. Is he somebody important?
Yeah, he's a general.
Okay. He pulls out a piece of paper and hands it to General Calthrop, which is Martin's dad. So it's an old man, Calthrop, who's looking at a map of the area. Dan points at it, saying that there's squatters here, here, and here. Of course, he may be stealing a page from your book and feigning an attack. Calthrop tells him, nah, that's not style. If he's showing an attack here, that's where he plans on being. That son of a bitch always does that. Dan, whose character's name is Captain Milligan, but I'm just going to refer to him as Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah, I never caught his name. That's just Dan Aykroyd.
It's just Danny. Says that he doesn't know if they could hold that area. The Hun artillery is already zeroing in on their trenches. Calthrop asks if there's any word from the line yet, and a dude on a radio tells them, nope. Dan thinks that that division should be reaching the top of the hill by now, then asks if Calthrop thinks that the enemy is going to be buying what they're selling them. Calthrop hopes so, saying that if the Germans think they're going on the offensive, they may hesitate long enough for them to regroup. Dan thinks that shit's brilliant, as long as they can stay on the hill. It's very important, Brandon. That hill is oh so important.
That's the whole linchpin for the war.
Apparently so. From the entrance, Ripper walks in and salutes the general. Dan asks what the meaning of this is, and Ripper says that he thinks the general should hear the report straight away. So the general walks up and offers Ripper a cigarette, asking, well, how'd it go? Lance smokes that a bit, saying, I'm afraid the counterattack up on the hill has failed. We never got there. Calthrop is all, say, what? Ripper further explains that they were forced to retreat and that it was ordered by Lieutenant Martin Calthrop, a.k.a. General Calthrop's son.
The other Calthrop.
Oh, no. Drama. Calthrop can't believe this shit and steps aside to think. Dan suggests that if that's the case, then they may have to concede this battle. Calthrop tells him, no way, Jose. I've never given up in my whole life. What'll it look like to the High Commander if we don't take that hill? Dan suggests maybe they could try one more time, and Calthrop's all, nah, let's move B Company over there. Get B Company on the line. The guy on the radio tries using it again, but he stops, looks up, and says, oh, the line's dead. Oh, no.
Shit. The Huns are inside the house.
Oh, my God, Brandon. Calthrop snatches that radio up to check for himself, and sure enough, it's dead. Ripper thinks it was probably the Germans. They've been setting up patrols, and they cut the lines. Calthrop tells Dan to tell the lieutenant, because this is all just a game of telephone, and the sergeant to wrangle up a couple of wiremen and find the break to fix it. Dan speaks up, saying it's probably not a great idea to send his son out on that mission, but Calthrop asks, why not? He's a section lieutenant. And Dan says, sergeant, tell him. Ripper speaks up a little here, being all, oh, I don't want to offend him or anything. But Calthrop tells him to just say it already. So Ripper says,
he's yellow, sir.
Calthrop turns around and says, get him in here. We cut to a moment later, and Lieutenant Martin Calthrop enters into the general's quarters. He moseys his way down the steps, saying, you wanted to see me, sir? Calthrop's all, did you forget how to report? So Martin stands like a soldier, saying,
Lieutenant Martin Calthrop reporting as ordered, sir.
The guy at the radio is still there, so Calthrop dismisses him and tells Martin to be at ease. He asks, is it true what the men are saying about you? And Martin's all, I don't know. It depends on what they're saying. Calthrop cuts to the chase, telling him the men are calling him yellow, that he's a coward. Martin thinks the men can say whatever they like because he doesn't give a damn, Brandon.
He really doesn't.
Well, General Calthrop sure does give a damn. And Martin gets all sassy, saying, well, then that's your prerogative. Calthrop asks if it's true that Martin made Ripper order the retreat. Martin nods his head, saying he saved the company because if they continued up that hill, they would have all died. He saved all the men. Every single one of them. Calthrop lets Martin know that the purpose of that attack was to pin the Germans down while the rest of the division fell back. Martin tells him, but we fell back anyway, so what's the difference? Calthrop chuckles, saying that the difference is that a lot of men died with bullets in their backs. Martin gets annoyed and angsty and says, ugh, would you have been happier if I was one of them that died?
He really is like an angsty teenager this whole episode.
He is, and when he said that, I was like, oh, okay. So we're not going to see much of the war. We're just going to get this, like, drama going on.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what we get.
It's not a phase, Dad.
Exactly. Ugh. Calthrop whips that teacup that he was holding, because, by the way, he was holding a teacup, to the ground and marches up to his son, saying that you have a job to do. Martin complains.
He sure does. He's like, I don't wanna.
Yeah, he does. He literally, Martin complains that he doesn't want to be in the army anymore. And he wants a discharge.
Army's stupid.
But General Calthrop can't discharge his son. Martin's all sassy, saying, oh my God, you can't do anything for me. Never good. Calthrop argues that a discharge would seriously undermine his command. So here's your orders. First, you're going to settle a patrol and lead it to the German lines. Second, there's a break in our communication cables. I want you to locate it and repair it. And Martin's all, what? Sir, with all due respect, I will put together that patrol, but I'm not going out there. He says, I don't have to. I'm an officer.
Oh, that's funny. Your general gives an order and you're like, I don't have to do that.
I'm not gonna. Hey there, everybody. Cortland here, your good buddy and your old war friend. Thank you so much for joining us today, whether this is your first episode or you've listened to everything that we have going on here. We are so thankful for you spending some time with us. I want to give a special shout out to all of our patrons for their support with our show. You can become a patron at patreon.com/privateisland, where we post plenty of new and exciting content for you to enjoy multiple times a week. We've got bonus episodes, early released episodes, videos, and so much more. I'd like to take a moment to thank our current patrons, the Beths, Veniswitch, Tristan, Redemption, Lyle, Eddie, Ray, Rad Magical, Faith, and Shane, the Goths, Stephen, Matt, Aaron, Brittany, Rachel, Sid, and Corey, the citizens of Carlsville, Sarah, Mr. Normal, Matt, Keith, Christy, Angela, and Merida, and your boys and girls, Kathy, Farron, Bryce, and Brian. Thank you for your support, everybody. Brandon and I truly appreciate it. We hope you follow us on social media for all the latest posts. You can find us on Twitter at UANPod, on Instagram and Threads at Up All Night Podcast, on YouTube at Up All Night HA Podcast, and on TikTok at Private Island Presents. If you haven't yet, you can find my first video on YouTube covering the tale of the Phantom Cab. I'd like to make more of these videos in the future, so I am always up for some suggestions for episodes to cover. You can also find me live on Twitch every couple of nights, twitch.tv/PrivateIslandC, where I play some cozy or spooky video games. We're still working our way through the 2023 Goosebumps series, with new episodes releasing on Thursdays. If you can't wait, though, we have those episodes up on Patreon on Mondays. I'd like to take a moment to thank the Benevolent Badger for their work on the music for our show, aside from this theme Dating Start from Undertale, composed by Toby Fox. I'd also like to thank Brandon for his work on the artwork. Thank you so much for listening in. For now, I'll let you get back to the episode, and I will talk with you again soon. Bye, everybody. Calthrop tells him, whoa, 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 it's because you're an officer that you have to go. Martin tells him, no, and steps away. Calthrop turns to him saying, come on, listen to me.
I can't give you a discharge. But if you do this for me, if you lead this patrol, I'll transfer you to the rear to get you off the front lines.
Martin gets excited, and we cut outside.
Well, I know you want to quit the army. Best I can do is send you on a dangerous, important mission instead.
You know what, though? Like, I get it. He's like, you do this one tiny, incredibly dangerous mission for me, and I will not let you leave the army.
The one last job. Seen it over and over again.
Out in the trenches, we see Martin walking through very slowly. He takes a look around to see there's men on the sides that are all banged up or dead and bloody. One dude has a missing leg and everything. Finally, he stops in front of Ripper, who's smoking a cigarette and looks pissed. Martin asks any sign of Corporal Meade, when suddenly, a dude slides down into the trenches. It's Corporal Meade! Oh, thank goodness. Martin asks, did you find the break in the line? Meade tells him, yeah, about 100 yards down, but the Germans are all over the damn place. In my opinion, the Huns were up to something. I wouldn't be surprised if they came after us tonight. Martin tells Ripper, all right, let's move out. And he climbs up the ladder to have a peek, and then he army crawls into the night. They make their way slowly through the battlefield, walking past barricades and barbed wire, until they stop for a moment and take a look. They walk some more, and they see a flare go off, so they hit the ground and crawl forward. The four men stop, because there's only four of them for this here dangerous mission, and Martin asks if they can see the break. One of them points at the flare, and Ripper says they're moving the line forward. Martin asks how he knows, and Ripper says that he can smell them, like he can smell the enemy. I don't know. Martin tells the boys that he thinks this isn't such a good idea, since the break is so close to the German line, even though it's only 50 yards ahead. He starts to freak out and crawl away, but Ripper tells him, we gotta do this. We need you. Look, why don't you stay here and guard the rear while we fix the cables? Somebody's gotta cover us. He hands Martin a whistle and he blows it a little bit, telling them that that is the signal. If anybody's coming, you can blow the whistle and then we'll get out of here. Martin takes one look at that and he complains that that shit will give away his position. Then an explosion goes off and we see another flare in the distance. So Martin asks how long this shit's gonna take, and the dude tells him, I don't know, like a minute or something. It's fine. I feel like I'm ripping through this episode really quick here, Brandon.
Well, half of this episode is just people walking.
That's true.
From one end of the battlefield to the other.
And with that, the three men crawl away and leave Martin alone. Ripper stops to tell him again to blow the whistle in case they get attacked, and we watch Martin watch the men crawl away. Now, Brandon, was there any point in this story where you were like, oh, he's totally going to blow that whistle?
No, not for a second.
Okay, me neither. Over in the trenches, Dan Aykroyd is having a little smoke because everybody smokes in this. It was 1918. He steps up on a ladder asking a guy how the repair team is going. The guy can't see anything, so he doesn't know, so Dan takes a look himself. Back over with Martin. He's still laying down looking around, but a cricket scares him, Brandon. Those crickets.
Oh, God.
Then he takes out his flask, and he has himself a little drink when something catches his eye. With the general. He's pouring himself some more tea, because he knocked all of his tea down before, and asks if the radio's back on. It's not. With Martin, he's getting more and more spooked when he sees a gaggle of dudes walking up on his team. He stares at them and sees that they see his team. He puts the whistle to his mouth, but then drops it, and it makes a loud tink noise. The Germans point his way and start shooting as he ducks down in his little hole. Martin looks back up to see his men getting fired at, and the Germans are getting blasted. Ripper gets exploded and flies through the air and right on top of Martin.
He is launched. He flies over.
Yeah, he definitely jumped on a trampoline and body slams his way into Martin.
To directly land on Martin.
He's all like bloody and stuff, and he yells out, "You're supposed to want us.
Why didn't you blow the whistle?"
And then he collapses to the ground as Martin yanks himself away and runs back to the trenches. With Dan, he's taking a look when up runs Martin screaming, "Oh God, don't shoot me!" Dan asks him, "What's all the hubba?" And Martin explains that the Germans were everywhere. They ambushed them. Ripper and the others, they're all dead. Dan tells the corporal to get a stretcher, since maybe the men are just wounded, but Martin yells, "No, they're totally dead. Don't even worry about them. I saw them die and everything.
Don't even check. Nobody flew on me or anything."
The Germans are everywhere, Brandon. There's no hope, no chance. He runs over to the general's bunker and busts in there saying that the Germans were waiting for him. The patrols, it was an ambush. I tried to save the men and I was blasting them, but I just couldn't do anything. Just kept firing and firing.
I just kept blasting. I was a hero.
He's got his guns out in his hands and he's kind of stumbling through this because he's lying. And he's like, I
barely made it back here alive.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah, that's the ticket.
General Calthrop stands up and hands his son a cigarette saying, "You did all that you could. That's all I could ask. Now, do you know why I had to send you out there again? I couldn't let those men think that you are a coward. How could I ask of them what I couldn't ask of my own son? Now you've shown them what you're made of, and you've shown me." And Martin thanks his daddy and asks, "Oh, you're still going to transfer me out of here, right?" And Calthrop tells him, "Oh, yeah, of course. I'm a man of my word. And no one could ever call you a coward again." That touching moment is interrupted by Ripper stumbling his way into the base, and he's calling Martin a yellow bastard, Brandon. Oh my, drama.
Whoops.
Calthrop calls for the medics, but Ripper tells him no, and he stumbles over to Martin. He's got his helmet covering his belly, and he says, "You goddamn coward." And he raises his gun to shoot Martin, but it gets yanked away from him, and he tells everybody that
he saw the German patrol come around behind us. He could have warned us, but he didn't. He's yellow.
Martin argues that that is not true, and Ripper's obviously delusional. Ripper pulls his helmet away, and we see a big hole in his belly, and his intestines are falling out, and he stumbles over to the general and tells him that Martin gave the German his own men.
He really spilled his guts there.
Did Brandon, you're canceled. I'm getting you out of here.
Oh, thank God. You're going to send me to a different...
Yeah, you're on the back of the podcast now. Martin argues more, saying, no way, I totally shot the enemy and everything. But Ripper calls him a liar and that he left them there to die. And then Ripper fucking dies himself.
Oh, okay. His last words are, you're yellow.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Dan Aykroyd closes his eyes as Martin tells his dad that he was totally telling the truth and it's Ripper's word against his.
Who are you going to trust? This badass army soldier or fucking Arnold from the Magic School Bus?
Yeah. Calthrop points at Martin's gun, asking if that's the weapon he used to shoot the Germans. And Martin says, oh, yeah, sure. Yep, totally is. Then the general grabs it and checks the chamber to see that it's still fully loaded. And he punches Martin in the face, saying that his weapon has never been fired and that they need to arrest this man. Smart. Martin gets taken away, kicking and screaming. And General Calthrop tells Dan to order his men to meet at the church. Court-martial Martin and everything will commence in 1 hour. We pop over to the church courtroom, and we see General Calthrop is ordering Martin guilty as charged for something.
The official crime is being yellow?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know what word I put in my notes here, though. Deliction? I don't know.
Dereliction.
Dereliction. I think it was dereliction. I totally misspelled it. It's fine. Dereliction of duty, deserting
delicious
under fire.
Duty.
And cowardice in the face of the enemy. According to military law, it's his dad's duty to be found guilty of the charges, and the penalty is death by firing squad.
Shit.
Yeah. Martin here sits in his chair defeated, and sentencing will be carried out at sunrise. He orders his captain to gather a group of 6 people to do the shooting and to take away Martin's shoelaces so that he can't hang himself. Martin takes a few steps to his father, who calls him a disgrace to his uniform, and Martin tells his dad that he never wanted to wear it in the first place, and that his dad was the only one who did, and then he gets escorted away.
He could have just, like, not, though.
He probably should have just not, you know?
Yeah. Like, if you don't want to join the army, just don't.
Well, Brandon, it was 1918. You had to do what Dad says, okay?
I know, some people were drafted in the past, but it seems like Martin chose to join the army.
Yeah.
He could have just not.
He probably should have just been like, no, I'm just going to shovel sawdust or whatever I do in 1919. I don't know. Dan walks up to Calthrop saying, maybe you should think about this first. But Calthrop snaps that there's nothing to think about.
There's no other option. Gotta murder my son.
Yeah.
Not even a plan B. That's just right away.
No, he's got to do it. Dan thinks maybe the general's being hasty, but the general tells him, no, I don't have cowards in my army. We cut to later that night where General Calthrop walks into the church and heads downstairs to the basement. He opens up a door to the catacombs or wherever the hell we are, and Martin is sitting there. He says,
hello, Father. What brings you down here? Oh, you don't mind me calling you Father, do you?
Let's see. You already had my shoelaces, and some captain came to take my belt. I told him he was wasting his time. I'm here because I'm afraid to die. And he laughs a bit about that one because it's so ironic, Brandon.
That's hilarious.
Calthrop tells him that wasn't an easy decision for him, even though it was. But the panel found him guilty, so he had no other choice. Martin gets dramatic here, saying, no, it was me who had no choice. All my life, I've done what makes you happy and to please you. I wasted my whole life. I went to military school at West Point, and now this. All I ever wanted from you is a little pat on the back. Calthrop's all pat on the back. That's it? Martin turns around saying, yeah.
A word?
It would have been a beginning. But can I let you in on a little secret? You were never a good father. Sorry. It's drama. It's so dramatic. Calthrop tells him that, well, then we're even because you were a shit lieutenant. Martin asks,
why? Because I'm afraid to die? Christ. 200 men leave the trenches. And 30 of them, they come back. Arms missing, legs missing. Anybody who goes out there and says they're not afraid are either a fool or a liar.
Calthrop steps forward saying, but you let the fear get the better of you. Everyone knows it. Martin stands up yelling, that's what I'm really guilty of, isn't it, Father? The whole world knows that the son of a great general, Calthrop, is afraid to die. Well, I am afraid to die. And then he starts crying. I mean, I don't know. I don't blame him. I guess I'd probably cry too, but still.
Look.
Okay.
I think that Martin is like, he's yellow. All right. He's not good. He sucks.
Uh-huh.
He should have just not joined the army and gotten other people killed and
yeah.
all that. At the same time, being in a war really does seem like some shit, and I wouldn't want to do it.
Yeah, me
and, yeah, I'd probably try to avoid being in that situation at all costs.
No, yeah, I don't blame you, man. That's why we started a podcast, to avoid the army.
That's true. That's the only reason.
Yeah. Calthrop sits now next to his son, saying, Martin, you're right. I am a shit father. I wasn't around most of the time. When I was young, I didn't see much of my father, but that's the way it is in the military families. All I ever wanted for you was to see you follow the line, but I was wrong. It was wrong for me to force you into that mold. Sorry, Martin. Martin says, yeah, too late for that. In an hour, I'm gonna die. But Dad says, no, it's not too late. You're not gonna die. He stands up and he says, do you think I'd kill my own son? I do. I do think that. Listen to me. There's always a blank in one of the rifles in the firing squad, so there's a level of doubt on who actually shot the fatal shot. I'm the one who loads the rifles. This time, I'll load them all with blanks. When the shots are fired, I want you to pretend you're dead. The division is moving out immediately after, so I'll make up a pack for you, a new identity card, some money, a ration or two. I'll put it in the ditch where you'll fall. As soon as the company moves out, you take off. Understand? Martin smiles, saying, oh my gosh, you're really going to do that for me? Calthrop tells him, yeah, sure, but there's one thing I want you to do.
Face that firing squad like a man. I want you to show them that you have courage. Show them that you're not afraid.
Martin sits up a little straighter, saying, yes, sir, I'll do it. We cut over to an hour later, and there's some soldiers doing some serious drumming, Brandon. Man, they got some skills.
I know.
They were like, I'll join the army, but only if I could be a drummer.
That's the way to do it. That's what Martin should have done.
Yeah, I would have joined the army as like a cook or something.
I'll be the guy who folds the flags.
General Calthrop tells the men of six for the firing squad to present their arms and goes through and loads each rifle up with one bullet. The church doors open up and everyone stops to look. Out walks Martin, looking kind of smug, and he says,
looks like a nice day to die, Father.
Yeah, all right.
He locks eyes with his dad, who continues loading the rifles. Martin slowly struts over to the firing squad and looks at all of the graves of some of the soldiers that have died, and he walks by his dad, who just stares at him, and continues marching. He takes a look at the stand above the ditch where he's going to be shot, and moseys his way over there. He looks down to see a collection of dead bodies wrapped up in white blankets. Then he takes another look and sees the pack that his father promised would be down there. General Calthrop looks his way as the firing squad gets into position. Dan Aykroyd steps up and pulls out a piece of paper reading, in the name of the American people, American expeditory, whatever. The American force, the 101st Infantry Regiment, having found guilty in cowardice in the face of the enemy, you are to be executed by rifle fire immediately in accordance to the judgment of the military court-martial. He pulls out a little case of cigarettes and he offers one to Martin, but Martin says, nah, I'd rather have a drink. Then he takes out his flask and cheers everybody and drinks up. He puts that away and Dan offers up a blindfold. Martin tells him, no, I don't want one of those. And Dan asks if there's anything he'd like to say. And Martin speaks up saying, actually, yes, I do. I tried, but I'm not the man my father is. I'm sorry, and I apologize. My fear of dying got in the way of my responsibilities to my men and the obligations to my commanding officers. I know now what Shakespeare meant. Cowards die many times before their deaths. The valiant never taste of death but once. He salutes his father, who quickly salutes him back and then says that, okay, I'm ready.
I was expecting more of a dramatic speech than that.
Yeah, because this episode has only been dramatic.
Oh, man. Oh, sorry, guys. I just ain't as good as my dad, you know?
What a great apology that was. He's just like, oops.
Sorry, my dad wasn't a very good dad, and he didn't give me any hugs, and it's really everyone else's fault.
Yeah, when you boil it down.
Hit me.
Dan tells the firing squad to get ready, and the priest or whatever walks up to pray for Martin for a quick second. Martin takes another look at the pack in the ditch, and Dan takes out his sword and yells, ready? And the men get into position, and we see General Calthrop here looking kind of sad. Martin locks eyes with his dad again, who looks down and away, and Martin realizes, oh shit, there is no blank! Then the firing squad shoot Martin, who gets blown back into the ditch, screaming, and he's bloody, and we see that he was blown clean out of his boots. Brandon, did you see this? Did you see this happening?
Not the boots part.
Okay. The boots was a surprise, huh?
Knocked right out of his boots. I was certain that he was going to die the whole time. And yeah. I was certain from pretty much the scene where the general orders him to go out on that covert mission.
Yeah.
I was like, the dad's going to try to kill him, isn't he? Because I thought maybe that that mission was intended for him to die during it. And it would be like, oh, you died doing an important mission. You're a hero.
Yeah, but then you saw that there was still like half an hour left and you're like, oh, no. Nope.
Yeah. Then I saw Lance Henriksen launch into Martin and I was like, wait, there's still more?
Yeah, yeah. Nah, I did too. Like, I didn't think it was anything, like, super malicious. I don't feel like he wanted his son to die, but, like, the second somebody calls the general's son yellow, like, you can't have that, Brandon. You can't have your good general name tarnished. Die. You know? In the ditch, Martin looks at himself, all bloody and shot, and looks up to see his father walk up and look down on him. He makes a little noise and then fucking dies, and Dan tells the general that Martin died like a man. Calthrop agrees, saying, yes, my son is not yellow. Even though he is. Then Dan calls for the company to move out on double time, and we cut back to Martin and zoom into his flask because that got blown out of his hands or pocket or whatever. And there's an engraving that says, "To Martin, let courage be thy name. Love, Dad." Aw, how sweet. And then we fade out of the episode. I do like, so, I don't know, this deception that the dad does of like, just act like you're going to be fine. It'll be all right. All to save his own face. Like,
yeah.
It's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, like I expected him to actually be killed, and I thought the dad would let it happen, but I didn't know that he was going to come and be like, look, I'm totally going to save you. It's going to be cool.
Yeah.
And yeah, he did that just so that Martin would not be at the firing squad like, oh my God, please don't kill me. Which he totally would.
He would too, yeah. But instead, he got like the smug Martin strutting his way down, being like, "I got this." Like,
it's a good day to die, dudes.
Yeah, yeah, right.
I'll see you later. I mean, never mind. I'm gonna die.
Yeah.
Wink. Right, Dad. Shut up, Martin.
See, that's how it would play out in like a sitcom situation. It was a MASH episode. Back with Crypty, we are zoomed right up to his face. He opens his eyes saying, I guess Martin finally learned his lesson. No guts, no glory. And he laughs a little. And the camera pulls back to see that our best buddy is tied up to a big old log. He's got a lever right next to him. He says, well, gotta go, kiddies. It's time for my shots. And he pulls that lever and we see an arsenal of guns lower into place. And he calls out, fire! And the guns all shoot Cryptkeeper. And he laughs, saying, oh, yes, boy, I got a bang out of that. And he laughs us out of the episode. And that is the end of season 3, Tales from the Crypt.
Wow. It was a short one.
Yeah, it was. I think the last season was like 18 episodes or something. This was only 13. No, this was 14 episodes long. So, yeah, a little bit of a shorter season there. Had some good times, Brandon. Had some bad times. But that was that's what you get.
Some ups, some downs. And we'll talk about those later on. But yeah. This episode was an up, I think.
I think it was really good. You, like you said at the beginning, they definitely had a bigger budget for this episode. It's a little bit longer. There's a lot of stunt work in this one, and it does a really good job of depicting a war, you know, really great scenery and explosions and shit and puddles and all that. It's great.
Yeah.
I don't know if I have anything more to say about Yellow, Brandon. Did you learn anything from Yellow? I don't know if anybody could.
Oh, let's see. I learned to hate whistles.
Oh, I think you hated whistles before this episode, though, Brandon.
I think I was neutral on whistles. They weren't my favorite, but now I definitively actively hate them.
I learned that this episode is probably going to be really difficult to edit because everything that happens has like explosions and gunfire all around it. So when I insert the clips of the episode, it's going to be really difficult to hear them.
Yeah.
What I really learned, though, Brandon, is that war, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing.
Wow. That's really deep. Did you come up with that?
It was all me. Yeah, I'm thinking about making it into a song. I don't know yet.
That sounds stupid.
Just got to get a catchy tune behind it, and then bam, I'm a millionaire. What I actually learned, though, is that they nicknamed the Germans the Huns, because I had no idea what they were talking about during this episode. I was like, huh, what is
just
this?
Waiting for them to show up?
Yeah, I was like, there's Huns, though? I don't know. I have to say, though, Brandon, this episode, Yellow, is pretty accurately named.
Yeah, it's a pretty good name, and it's like half of the dialogue in this episode as well.
It's true, yeah. 50% of this episode is just people saying yellow.
You could make a supercut. Yeah, I'm not. Yellow.
I'm not going to do that. I made that Carly Beth supercut one time, though. That was pretty great.
It's gorgeous.
What could we name this episode, though? What would be a better, more fitting name?
I knew I should have stayed home today.
I'm trying to think here, Brandon. Is there a better name for this episode? There's really not.
No, really not. Yeah, I got nothing.
It could have been like Deep in the Trenches. I don't know. Is that a thing?
Dan Aykroyd.
Oh,
smoking.
Yeah.
I don't know.
How about just Daddy Issues? Boom.
Yeah.
The real meat and potatoes of this episode is that drama. Family drama in World War One. The end. Brandon, we got a whole slew of people to meet here. Do you want to meet these cast of characters?
Yeah, who are these unknowns?
Okay, well, let's start with the first one. Kurt Douglas, who played General Calthrop. The late Kurt Douglas passed away in 2020.
At the age of 103.
Oh my God, really? Oh yeah, he was born in 1916. Damn, he lived a life.
He was born during World War One.
That's crazy. He's really old in this episode, and then he lived like another, you know, handful of years. So that's amazing.
Yeah.
Have you seen this guy in anything before? I mean, he's been in a lot of shit.
He's an incredibly famous actor.
Yeah, he started things off in 1946 with The Strange Love of Martha Evers. What's up with that? He was in tons of things in the 50s, though, Brandon. The Bad and the Beautiful. 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea? He was in that. I've heard of that. Last Train from Gun Hill.
He played Spartacus in Spartacus.
Oh, get out, did he?
The actual Spartacus, not the other pretenders who are like, I'm Spartacus. No, the fuck you're not.
He was in Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde back in 1973. The problem I have is that I don't know what most of these movies and stuff are. He was in The Simpsons for an episode, Touched by an Angel. Most recently, he was in 2008's Empire State Building Murders. What is going on in there?
I don't know. Only murders in the Empire State Building.
His most known for Spartacus, Paths of Glory, Lust for Life, and The Final Countdown, not the song.
Ah, that's a shame.
Yeah. Next up, we have Eric Douglas, who also passed away in 2004. This is Lieutenant Martin Calthrop.
Yes, this is Kirk Douglas's son.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's really sad that he passed away so young, 1958 to 2004. Eric here, he started things off in 1960 with Strangers When We Meet. He was a child at an amusement park, and he was uncredited for the role. He was also
Good work, Eric.
One episode of The White Shadow, a movie called The Spy, Who Did It Better. He was in The Golden Child. Doesn't that have Eddie Murphy in it?
Yep.
I knew it. He was most recently in The Words Left Unsaid from 2007, so... That's kind of weird. It must have been in post-production for a while.
Where he played Mordor.
Oh, classic role, Mordor. I think he's probably, I don't know, I guess he's most known for Golden Child, where he played a yellow dragon. I don't know how he did that, but that's pretty crazy. I don't know. I don't have much to say about him.
No, he wasn't in a lot of stuff.
No, he did good in this episode.
Famous actor's son, Michael Douglas's brother, and he passed away young.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
It really is. He did a good job in this episode. Next up, Lance Hendrickson plays Ripper here. We've already talked about Lance Hendrickson because he was in Cutting Cards. So we can just kind of skip around here.
He's still great.
He's been in everything. Just about everything. Really great guy. Last character that we can talk about here, Dan Aykroyd. It's Dan Aykroyd. I don't...
Yeah.
I mean, he's also been in
most famous for Nothing But Trouble. Of course.
He started things off in 1975 with Coming Up Rosie. He was in, of course, Saturday Night Live and Ghostbusters. A lot of Ghostbusters things. Did a lot of writing for Ghostbusters. It's Dan Aykroyd. He's in essentially everything.
The Great Outdoors.
Yeah.
Love that movie.
He was in Tammy. He was in Working Moms for 5 episodes. Ghostbusters Afterlife. A lot of stuff. Most recently, he was in Zombie Town, which is an R.L. Stine zombie movie that I watched that I thought was okay at best.
All right, well, I'll keep my eyes out for that.
Yeah, so we're done here, Brandon. Done with season 3 of Tales from the Crypt. And in typical Up All Night fashion, next week we're just going to be talking about Tales from the Crypt season 3. You know, answering questions and and all that jazz, as the cool kids say. So, yeah, we're going to be talking about season 3 of Tales from the Crypt, Brandon. I don't even remember what the first episode was anymore. So this is going to be a look back at everything season 3 of Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah, I'm excited.
I am too, because I don't have to do notes, Brandon. I got to put together a list or whatever, but like, that's easy baby stuff compared to doing notes.
Yeah, you just get to talk to me for a while.
Oh, geez. So exciting. But that's next week, Brandon. Any final thoughts on Yellow before we just end this episode?
Lance Henriksen has great form when he's flying through the sky.
I mean, I'm sure it was like
he a stunt landed double, that but... triple McTwist
right into Martin. Awesome. Well, Brandon, I've been up all night. I think I'm going to go ahead and just get out of here. I will see you next week when we talk about Tales from the Crypt season 3 in its entirety. Are you ready, Brandon?
I'll be here.
Me too. All right. I'll talk to you later. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
He's yellow, sir.